The battle in government between cities and states is a common one around the country. In Arizona, Phoenix, Tempe, and Bisbee, among others, have called on lawmakers to stop trying to micromanage some of their community decisions. But the bigger picture of congressional representation could be more alarming and impactful over the next couple of decades. Citizens who live in very populous areas may actually have less influential representation than those who make up less dense regions. With me to explain what's going on now and what the near future looks like is David Birdsell, Dean of the School of Public and International Affairs at Baruch College. David, what makes you wary of the direction representation is going, especially at the federal level?
I think the first thing to observe is that cities are demographically different from the less populated areas outside of cities. They tend to be more diverse. They tend to be a little younger. They tend to be much more educated. And people live differently. They live closer to one another. Many of them live in apartments. They are much less likely to own cars. I live in New York City, which is a place in the United States where people are least likely, on average, to own a car. And that means they use more public transit. They walk more. They interact with their environment differently from their counterparts in more lightly populated areas. And that leads to different policy priorities, infrastructure investment, perhaps the availability of telemedicine and distance education and other things that become a very, very high priority in communities where there are long distances between providers of services of that sort, medical services, educational services, and perhaps not so much if they're all cheek by jowl with one another in a city. So one of the challenges is to try to figure out how to take these very dense population areas and represent them adequately in legislatures, particularly in a body such as the Senate and other bodies throughout the 50 states that award representation based upon a geographical region rather than a population, when the populations can be radically, radically different, even given the same number of people voting for them in a given body of a legislature.
Well, and how has gerrymandering affected that? Because if you have districts that are divided, and not in all cases, certainly, but many districts where there is not a real cross-section of people, as you say, maybe an urban district is mostly urban people, and then a rural district is such, there's less crossover, it seems, than there maybe used to be.
Well, this is really for legislative bodies at the national level, the House of Representatives, and in state legislatures that aren't unicameral legislatures, that body that is derived from population. So the question is, you've got a population number, we know because of voting rights legislation and subsequent court interpretations, that you have to maintain roughly equal numbers of people within those jurisdictions, but who gets into those jurisdictions specifically, and that's where the gerrymandering question comes in. What's happened at the national level, and I'm thinking, of course, of all of the boundaries drawn within states to compose the Congress, is that those jurisdictions have been composed to make it more likely that the ruling party will continue its dominance in that state, and to make the districts as a result relatively more homogenous, more Republicans in districts A, B, and C, more Democrats in districts D, E, and F, or perhaps more Republicans in A, B, and C, and more Democrats only in D and E. And that's the kind of imbalance that you find in the House of Representatives that means that if you're going to have a shift in leadership, you've got to have these very profound changes in popular sentiment, double-digit percentages for sure, but even then going perhaps 5-6 points above that just to deal with the maldistribution of political sentiment in a district. The other thing to be concerned about with that kind of a model, whether you lean right or lean left, because, of course, the state house leadership changes over years, and what is the Democrats lament in one year, maybe the Republicans lament in another, is that it forces the politicians in those areas to play to the more extreme bases in their parties. There are, you can't win in a deep red district unless you're a Republican. So the general election becomes sort of an afterthought. The real contest is in the primary. And that makes it much less likely that we elect to Congress people who have the habit and the inclination of reaching across the aisle to try to find points on which to compromise.
Is there a thought you have as to why the political divide seems to be so great between rural and urban? Is this one of those things that just this is just how we are as human beings, and we sort of coalesce in a certain way because we have similar agreements, similar opinions, whatever it may be. Because the urban, certainly when we look at the large cities, those tend to be those that lean more left, and rural tends to lean more right.
There are a number of factors that are converging. Cities, by and large, there are, of course, exceptions to this rule, but cities are continuing to grow, whereas the rural areas are largely depopulating. And one of the demographics that's leaving rural areas, by and large, and there are some counter trends, but by and large, it's younger people in the shank of their working years who are going to the places where the jobs are. You have bleaker economic prospects in some regards in many rural areas than you have in urban areas. We find ourselves in a geographical sense segregating by education. The urban areas are, on average, much more highly educated than most rural areas. And of course, I'm accepting those places that have large university populations. The way that you knit your community together is different. And in each one of these cases, we're pushing ourselves further away from one another and making it less likely that we'll encounter one another in the course of any given year, much less the course of any given week or day. And it's a real challenge to try to put these forces back together.
What could make a change, even a gradual change, and sort of dull the momentum or stop the momentum when it comes to us moving into such separate, even more separate camps than we are right now?
I fear that this is going to accelerate for a period of time. If we follow this logic of populations moving progressively to more urban areas, that representational issue gets worse and worse. So by 2040, just under 70% of the population will live in 15 of the nation's most populous states, which by definition have our largest cities, giving more than two-thirds of America all of 30 members of the U.S. Senate, whereas the other 35 states with much smaller populations will command 70% of the representation of that body. And so this becomes a crisis. The real question for me is, how do we craft the bargains that will, A, make sure that the benefits that we generate as a nation, wherever they are generated, flow across the nation to the most even extent possible, at least with respect to the possibility of opportunity, that people can see themselves in the collective economic might that is the United States, that they're not marginalized in some fashion.
David Birdsell is Dean of the School of Public and International Affairs at Baruch College.